Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. They offer just about every battery under the sun, from car and truck batteries to batteries for your trail cameras and rangefinders. Select retail locations even offer cell phone repair and cracked screen repair. Find a local retail location at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Hey guys and gals, welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoor Podcast, where you will be educated, entertained, and equipped to get more out of your outdoor experience. So hold on tight, because here we go. Welcome back to the show, everybody. I'm trying to refrain from saying we have a great one this week, but to be honest, we have a great one this week. So maybe next week I'll try not to say that, because I say it every week. But anyway, I hope everybody out there is doing good. I myself am doing pretty fantastic. Like I mentioned last week, I went out to the Texas Panhandle with my boss slash best friend. And we went out there and did some turkey hunting on his family's land. They have quite a bit up in the Texas Panhandle. We were just like maybe 30 miles from the Oklahoma border, kind of on the eastern side there. But anyway, they have a ton of turkeys out there. And so we went out there and we took his son. His son is 6 years old. And so it was awesome having him there. You know, he get to watch and hang out with us. And we let him, you know, shoot the 22 and stuff like that. And so it was just a great time. I will tell you, we were successful. It was maybe one of the best turkey hunts that I've ever been a part of. It was so awesome. And I don't want to ruin it just yet, because I plan to do some more turkey hunting, and so I'm probably going to save it and kind of do like a whole just turkey hunting, you know, episode. And so, yeah, I'm not going to ruin the story just yet, but be looking forward to it, because it was awesome. This coming weekend, I am hopefully going to do some more turkey hunting as the southeastern region is finally opening up where I hunt. And, man, overall, it seems like the numbers are down a little bit. Not necessarily the numbers, but I think I mentioned before, like, I haven't seen very many toms, like, you know, older, mature turkeys. And so I've been, you know, kind of contemplating about whether I would shoot a Jake or not. And again, like, I don't know a lot about turkey hunting. So I actually did a little research today about, like, if you should, you know, shoot toms or I'm sorry, Jakes or not. Like, I thought, you know, it's kind of like deer, like you try to let them get older and mature and it's good for the whole, for the herd and everything. But from the research I did, there's really no reason not to shoot a Jake from what I read. Basically the two reasons, they had for not shooting a Jake was that it's one less tom the next year, and you don't look as cool on social media. That's really the only reason I found not to shoot a Jake. And so if I get out there and I'm not seeing any toms, I have a feeling I'm going to pull the trigger on a Jake, because I don't know, like this last week got me really jacked up about turkey hunting, and I want to continue that on. I don't think I've ever killed more than one turkey in a year, and I've definitely never killed two species in a year. I've killed Easterns and I've killed Rios, but I've never got it done in the same year. And so that's kind of my goal for this upcoming weekend. Of course, it's a weekend, and so they are predicting rain. I think there's like a 97% chance of rain. And so I hope I get some hunting in. I'm not positive I will, but I'm sure going to try. So yeah, that's enough of the turkey stuff. This week, I talked to TJ Norman. And TJ actually contacted me after my episode about the controlled hunts and points and all that stuff. And he and his family drew a bunch of tags in northwestern Oklahoma this last year. Two of his sons drew youth tags, and then he and his family put in as a group and drew some tags. And so it just kind of works, you know, rolling it all in. And it was great hearing from him. It was really nice to talk about hunting in the northwest portion of the state. I feel like I haven't got to cover that yet. So it was kind of a two birds with one stone type thing. So, yeah, it's just an awesome conversation. I would also like to say real quick before we get started, I've had a lot more interaction the past like 2 weeks on social media with you guys, and I love it. I enjoy it. I've had some positive feedback. I've had a few questions, and so please, if you're out there listening, don't hesitate to reach out to me. I can't guarantee that I will have an answer, but I will do my best. One question I've gotten is about the new walk-in hunting, controlled hunt they're doing this year for elk. And I've reached out to a few people, but I haven't heard anything back. And I don't want to talk about it unless I really know what I'm talking about. And so I'm not sure I'll get the information in time to put it out on a podcast before the date is up. But if I do find something out, I will put it out on my social media and try to help you guys out. So I would have loved to put it on this episode, but unfortunately, I just didn't get any of the answers I was looking for before I had to put it out. So look forward to that. And that, I believe, is going to do it. And so, TJ, like I said, he contacted me, talked to him a little bit, seemed like a great guy. So I took a risk and had him on, and it worked out awesome. He's a heck of a storyteller, and he does a great job talking about the process and the hunts, and goes into great detail and gives a lot of tips. And so, without further ado, here's my interview with TJ Norman. Hey everybody, welcome to the show today. Today I'm talking to TJ Norman. How you doing, TJ?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. It's been a long day, but I'm ready to relax and talk about deer hunting. So if you would, real quick, TJ, why don't you just give us a quick little rundown of who you are and where you're from?
Like you said, I'm TJ Norman. I grew up here in the central part of Oklahoma, Luther, Edmond, Oklahoma City area. I've got some family land in north central Oklahoma that'll come into play, and I've got some family land in the panhandle that we do hunting and fishing and that kind of stuff on. So
awesome, and I'm excited to have you on because I feel like I've talked to people from southwestern Oklahoma, northeastern, and southwest, but I haven't got anybody from the northwest part. Man, I can't talk today. I'm excited to have you on. Today we're mostly going to be talking about your 2020 mule deer season, correct?
That is correct. I and the whole family had a great year. And part of that's work, part of that's luck, as usual. So
awesome. So to get us started, if you would, give us a quick rundown of just kind of the draw process y'all went through. You said like your whole family drew, so I'm assuming y'all probably entered the draw as a party, or a group. And so if you would, real quick, just kind of walk us through that process and how everything went down.
Yeah. So, and, also whenever this drops, there'll be, a week or so, maybe 2 weeks left in the Oklahoma controlled hunt process. We call it the controlled hunts, and, $5, to put your name in the hat. Not a bad gig. There's elk, there's antelope, deer and turkey. And, there's the youth sections for those as well. So, last year at this time, I put in my three kids. I've got two boys. They're the oldest, 13 and 12, and then my daughter is 10. We put all three of them in just for a selection of the youth hunts. I'm a little bit of a statistical nerd, so when the draw results come out from the previous year, I put them all into a spreadsheet and then sort the spreadsheet by percentages and that kind of stuff to try to look and see which management area, which hunts, happen to have the best chance, at a deer overall. And then, we've always viewed the controlled hunts as a way to maybe go shoot, a big deer somewhere where, and a lot of our controlled hunts are, a gun hunt in an area that's archery only, or maybe a gun hunt outside of the regular gun season and those type of deals. That's how Oklahoma's draw system works usually. Mm-hmm. So, put in for a couple of the management areas. I'm going to go ahead and say them. It's not, it'd be really easy to figure out which one it was anyways. And then part of the story is going to help later. So the beaver management area is in the panhandle of Oklahoma. It's split up into two different zones. with slightly different regulations on each one. And so the youth hunt is on one side, and then the draw hunt that we got drawn in is on the other side. So that'll come back into play later. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we put in, and then in about, I don't know, it's usually the 1st of June or so is whenever Oklahoma posts their controlled hunt results. Mm-hmm. And my younger son, the 12-year-old, got drawn for the Beaver River McFarland Unit gun hunt. And my family, my mom, my dad, my brother, and I all put in as a party hunt, and we got drawn for the Beaver River regular side controlled hunt. You know, and so we had those dates, we had those times, we had all that kind of stuff. So we were excited about actually getting out there and doing that. My oldest son got drawn for Cherokee Game Management Area, and I'll tell that story as well when we got up there. Mm-hmm. So I feel bad for him because he didn't get near the amount of on the ground scouting as the other son did because of what's going on.
Right.
So yeah, that's the draw hunt. Any questions or anything like that about what I didn't cover there?
No, you did a great job. The only question I had is, what were the dates for that hunt?
So, Andrew's, the youth hunt was during youth gun season, which was October 16, 17, and 18. And then the party, the adult party hunt was November 21st and 22nd. It's that first weekend in gun season. And again, that's on a management area that you can't gun hunt. Mm-hmm. So that's why the draw is there. You get 2 days of gun, and then it goes back to archery for the rest of in that management area.
Gotcha.
So.
All right, sweet. So you and your almost your entire family draws these tags. And you're ready to go. Did you do any preseason scouting? Talk about that.
Yeah, so when we found out that we, you know, two separate units of us had got drawn for that section, we definitely wanted to go up there and give it a go. So we went up during dove season, and I didn't realize this, and now that I've learned it, it's kind of going to become a family tradition that there's a ton of doves up there in the panhandle. On almost all the management areas up there from Woodward, you know, west, everybody I've talked to says that, you know, there's a bunch of doves. And even the managers last year were saying, oh, we just didn't have the dove numbers that we had last year. And there wasn't near as many hunters, you know, as we normally see. And us from here in the central part, you know, there was birds flying every day, just hundreds of them. And we're like, if this is a slow, you know, weekend, what does a good weekend look like kind of thing? It was crazy. But yeah, so we went up for dove season, shot some doves. I'm a terrible wing shooter. So I basically wanted to go sit on a hill and look for deer instead of shooting at doves whenever everybody else was shooting at doves. So that first night, I got up there, I shot at doves until sunset, you know, then the daily, you know, season ends there for doves on you know, daily hunting hours. Mm-hmm. And I ran up the hill real fast and just, you know, started glassing for deer for that last 30 minutes of daylight or so. And saw some nice whitetail bucks, saw a bunch of, you know, does and fawns and that kind of stuff. I don't think I saw any muleys that evening. You know, rinse and repeat the next night. I did the same thing. I shot at a few doves, went up to a different spot, you know, looked around. I did end up seeing them that night. So that would have been, you know, whatever, September 5th or something like that. Mm-hmm. I ended up seeing probably 4 or 5 different mule deer bucks that were all very nice. Mm-hmm. And I'll just, before anybody gets excited, according to the manager, just about every single one of them got shot at some point last year. So unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be a pretty good crop of mule deer for next year. And that's something that I would... you know, that I would caution people, you know, everybody running up there, all that kind of stuff. It's just, we all go up there because we've never shot a mule deer before. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of us, you know, there's a lot of people, myself included, that went up there just to shoot a mule deer. Mm-hmm. So I would not be surprised if within the next few years, there's some change in the regulations regarding mule deer in Oklahoma. Because right now it's just a free for all, you know, the whitetail tag and the mule deer tag is the same. Mm-hmm. But it wouldn't surprise me if at least on management areas, there isn't some change to that, just to give the muleys a chance to grow up a little bit, you know, sometimes.
Yeah, I can definitely see there being maybe a separate draw for that or something.
I did put some cameras out as well during that trip in September. I knew I was coming back up the next weekend with my brother and a best friend to shoot some more doves. Mm-hmm. And so I had, you know, put some cameras out, got a few pictures, not too much. I mean, it's giant open. I mean, you could see forever. So it's kind of hard to figure out where do I put a camera? Which fence post do I put a camera on, you know, that a deer might actually jump over the fence here at this spot instead of somewhere else? Mm-hmm. I did get some pictures. I saw some really nice whitetails, nice muleys, you know, and that got us excited for coming back the next weekend. Next weekend we shot at some doves. We found a tank. They've got a bunch of, pre-built prefab tanks that they've got, wells drilled on. Mm-hmm. And there's like 30 of them, I think, on, you know, this giant management area. And we walked about a mile and a half down to this other one, and that's where nobody else had been. So the doves were still there, mm-hmm. you know, like anything else, everybody had parked on the road and shot at the tanks that were right next to the road. And there were no doves there anymore, but they were still around. You just had to find them, which is no different than anything else. You know, once the pressure starts happening, everything finds those places where nobody else wants to be.
Right.
So,
right.
So before I jump back into the rest of the beaver hunts, let me jump up to my oldest son, Elijah. He got drawn for Cherokee, and we only did, like, e-scouting stuff. We never went up there. We didn't do anything like that. His hunt was November 7th and 8th, which you would think, you know, right in the middle of the quote-unquote rut. Mm-hmm. You've got a gun hunt on a place that doesn't normally get, you know, gun. It's archery only up there as well. We did find a really great spot, you know, through e-scouting, topo lines. There's a bunch of food plots that they put up there. That place, it seems like the wildlife department does a great job on that particular management area. There's lots of food plots that are built, lots of trails that are cut, you know, those kind of things. So we found a good spot, went down. It was a Saturday-Sunday hunt. We got down to where we wanted to be Saturday morning, sat overlooking this field that was, again, probably about a mile and a half or so back from the road. But this one had a trail that you could walk all the way, you know, a road that you could walk all the way to it. And sat there that morning, didn't see anything, decided to go back into town for lunch, came back from lunch, and there was a car parked in the, you know, in the trailhead there where we wanted to park. So we didn't go down that spot. And we went, you know, to another food plot nearby, and come to find out those people that hunted there did shoot a nice buck that evening. So the note to self, don't necessarily go into town and get lunch, you know.
Sometimes you got to stick somewhere. It out. Uh-huh. Sometimes you just got to yeah, stick it out.
Yeah, or at least stay a little closer and maybe be the first person back to the, you know, to the parking spot, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. But yeah. That happens. My son doesn't have a clue that happened. He just knows we did end up we saw a doe and a fawn that evening in the food plot we were on. And, you know, this is Saturday evening, and he was like, I want to shoot it. And I'm like, you can if you want to, but we still have all day tomorrow, you know, the normal, mm-hmm. you know, parental talking him in and out. He shot does before, you know, at the farm and that kind of stuff. And so he decided to wait. 'Cause I said, you never know, you know, a buck may step out right behind her, into this food plot, you know, all those kind of things. Mm-hmm. Did end up seeing anything. Sunday, we walked all over the place. We went and sat in that same spot that we sat Saturday morning, and then we kind of walked, did a bunch of scouting, basically. If we ever go back, we've got some good intel on, you know, where to be and all that kind of stuff. There's mm-hmm. nothing like actually walking it and seeing it. Right. You know, you can play online all you want to, you know, the topo lines and food plots and all that kind of stuff, but until you're actually there and you actually see where, you know, they're traveling in and out, it's pretty tough to make a game plan from just being on the computer. Mm-hmm. They were running, though. We just weren't in the right spot. One of the guys that was camping right there next to us said that he and his daughter, every time they sat, they had bucks and does running by, and she ended up shooting a nice little eight pointer. I think Sunday afternoon, I think it was. So it was, we just weren't in the right spot, or, you know, who knows? You never know what happens. And one of the places, and this is something to keep in mind for, you know, everybody that's doing any kind of public land hunting, is even if you're the only person in the parking lot that day, you know, you have no idea that the 3 days prior, somebody might have been, you know, running around that same area. I do a lot of during the week type hunting, just because I, you know, I own my own business. I can do whatever I want. And so I'll go hunt Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you know, and everybody that shows up on Friday may think that nobody's hunted it for 6 or 7 days since last Sunday. But that isn't necessarily the case. And you just never know, you know, who's going to be there, when they're going to be there, and all those kind of things. So he didn't get anything on the controlled hunt. He does get some redemption later in the panhandle while we do that. So now, so we'll jump back to, so Andrew, my middle son, well, no, let's start with October 1st. So we'd made this giant plan. We scouted all, you know, those 2 weekends in September. I wanted to shoot a muley. I've shot a crossbow now for like 10 years, just because it's fun. And, I did have shoulder surgery, a few years ago, and I haven't tried to pull a bow back since I had that surgery, but my philosophy is always the most effective means that's legal.
Right.
So I archery hunt because I can't muzzleloader hunt. I muzzleloader hunt because I can't gun hunt, you know, those kind of deals. So I'm not one to be an archery purist or anything like that. I'd rather kill the thing, kill whatever it is, the most effective way.
Right.
You know, I understand there's some fun and there's some challenge aspects to it. And I may, you know, pick a vertical bow up eventually. But right now I shoot a crossbow, shooting the Excalibur Eclipse, a big recurve crossbow, which weighs a whole bunch and it sucks carrying it 10 miles, which will come back into play. So October 1st, me and my dad, my dad's retired, so he and I can go do whatever we want to, whenever we want. He works for me sometimes as well. And we go up to the panhandle again. We're going to hunt beaver. You know, we've got all this intel that first week in September when I was up there, I snuck in on some muleys within about 50, 60 yards from them. I've got some videos and pictures of them, really cool. So I'm like, I can do this. You know, I've never done it before. I'm a, you know, central Oklahoma tree stand, sit by the edge of a field kind of guy, but I've got it in my blood now that I can go sit on a hill. I can stalk up a muley and see him and spot him and stalk him and get it done. So October 1st rolls around. I'm expecting there to be other people on the management area, you know, opening day and all that kind of stuff. It was not the case. You know, I figured where I would sit, if anybody else was in the area, they would bump deer towards me. When I had bumped deer during scouting, they had kind of ran this path almost every single time. So I went and sat down there on that path just in case somebody else, you know, bumped a deer elsewhere. I might get a chance at him, you know, coming by. Mule deer are notorious for running to the hill and then stopping and looking back at you. And so I was hoping I'd be sitting somewhere when they stopped and looked back at the other guy, you know, I'd be nearby. Didn't see anything that first morning. First evening, sat in a different spot. Did end up seeing somebody did some shooting nearby. I don't know if he was sighting in a gun or just playing or something like that. And I saw a big whitetail running by. So I was keep that in mind, where he came from, where he went, all that kind of stuff. That panhandle, there seems to be no rhyme and reason where they go, why they went that way. There's ag fields in a certain direction, but it didn't ever seem like they were coming or going to those ag fields. And it may be most of it was after dark or before light, you know, and I was just seeing the tail end of when they were just milling around in the sagebrush and that kind of stuff. Let's see. First evening, I saw some, didn't see any close enough to put a stalk on. The October 3rd evening, I was setting up in a different spot, and I just happened to look over my shoulder towards the setting sun, and I saw a mule deer buck standing up. And so I was like, okay. So I went to put a sneak on him, and I snuck within about 50 yards of him, and he was bedded down. And I couldn't, you know, that stuff, for those people that have never been out there, that stuff's anywhere from, you know, shin tall to 6 feet tall, depending on what it is and if you're up or down or, you know, left, right, And so they were bedded. I couldn't see them, so I just had to sit and wait. And they ended up standing up and walking off about 75 yards from me as they were, you know, they didn't come down the hill towards me. They went down the hill away from me and didn't get a chance. Had to watch them walk away about 55 yards or so is as far as I'm going to shoot with that crossbow. And so did make that happen. Sunday morning, I believe was the 4th. I went and sat at a different spot. I met some guys down there, and they had been seeing this same group of mule deer bucks come into this water tank and leave each morning. So I went and sat at it Sunday morning, didn't see anything. And then I just decided I was going to go on a hike. And I ended up walking about 10 miles that day. After everything was done, said and done. That management area, I think, is about 3 to 4 miles tall, and it's almost 20 miles long. So it's a long, skinny management area that's on that, on the river up there. So I started at one place, I walked all the way to one end of it, turned around, walked back. And basically what I was doing is I would just walk to the hill. I'd sit on that hill and I'd glass for 5 or 10 minutes, you know, and then I'd walk down the valley, walk to the next hill, kind of thing. Anywhere from, you're usually looking between 400, 500, maybe 800 to 1,000 yards out most of the time. I happened to crest this hill, sit down, take a break, you know, look. There's a funky shadow underneath this tree. And I'm like, oh, that's a funky shadow. And, you know, didn't think anything about it. But there's not very many trees out there, so a shadow under a tree is kind of normal. And a few minutes later, I look back up, and the shadow's not there anymore. And I'm like, that's, you know, suspicious. So I walked down that valley, kind of kept a hill in between me and that tree, and then I popped up around that tree. Got a better look. I was probably about 100 yards or so away, and sure enough, I could see a mule deer bedded down up underneath that tree. And you know, checked the wind, did all that kind of stuff, crept in, basically crawled in to about 50 yards from him. And and I'm sitting there on this little hill, and he's about 50 yards away from me, and I could see him. And all of a sudden I look, and behind him is a little bit bigger mule deer. And so I decided to back out, and I circled all the way around. And And I don't know, you know, they always tell you all the podcasts that you listen to. Shout out to Remy Warren's podcast. They are just, I probably wouldn't want to go hunt the West like I do if we didn't listen to those type of podcasts about glassing and stalking and walking and all that kind of stuff. And his tips and tricks and everything have been awesome. So the wind is blowing over the top of this little sand dune that they're laying down on. And so I could circle all the way around, and it's kind of an L-shaped dune. And I was able to come up on one side of it where the wind wasn't blowing my scent to them. And I crested the hill, and there he was standing there, and about 33 yards. And I ended up shooting my first muley with the crossbow, a 3x3. He looks a lot like a whitetail. He's got a whitetail rack with no brow tines. And, he was cool. That's why I shot him. Plus, I'd never shot a mule deer before. I didn't know if I'd ever see a mule deer before, you know, all those kind of things. So 2.5-year-old, cool looking deer. Mm-hmm. So he ran off, piled up. I went and found him. And then, you can't drive on these management areas either. Mm-hmm. So I called the manager, and I'm like, because he's, you know, those guys are cool. Biologists, the managers, all those guys. I've never met any of them at any of the wildlife department, you know, areas that aren't just helpful. You know, they love people coming out. They want to help you, all those kind of things. So I call him and I tell him, I kind of try to tell him where I am. You know, they've got names for all of their stock tanks out there. But I don't know what the names are. So he's telling me this name, and I'm like, I don't know if that's what it is. It's over here, over here. You know, I'm trying to give directions. End up just dropping him an Onyx pin, and you know, so he can tell where I am. And he goes, oh yeah, I can get to a road that's, you know, 500 yards from you. Just drag it there, and we'll come pick you up. So I walk all the way back to the truck, get my dad. My dad and I have this this 4-wheel cart that he built. And so we drag it down there. And so this is like 5 miles where I shot him. So it's 2 miles back to the truck, 2 miles back to the deer. That makes the 9 miles. And then I only had to drag him 500 yards or so until they came and picked us up in the truck. So I didn't have to walk I didn't have to walk that other, you know, 2.5 miles back to the truck kind of a thing.
Now, I have a quick question.
Got him out, got him taken care of. That awesome, you know, that kind of stuff. So my dad sat on tanks every evening, had deer come in, had does, had a group of mule deer does come in almost every evening, you know, sitting on the tank. And the wind's out of the south, he sat, you know, on the north side of the tank. If it was on out of the north, he sat on the south side. And he, you know, early, I think that probably would work. You know, they might get a little more spooky as more and more people are down there, obviously. Mm-hmm. So that was it. October 4th, shot one, you know, came home. Mm-hmm. I did leave a camera up there as well. I found a giant rub and giant scrapes in this little patch of trees that were in there. So I set a camera up there. Had a few nice deer come by. Nobody actually like worked the scrape like I thought they would. You know, Central and my Central Oklahoma place, sometimes places just get thrashed when they work scrapes, and this is what that looked like. And you know, maybe I smelled it up, and so the whatever ones that did the originally did it but didn't come back, so didn't really get too much work in it, but did get them traveling through this little patch of trees. So that brings us to October 16th.
Hey, real quick before we move on, I got a quick question for you, or two quick questions actually. One, as far as you know, you were talking about your drag out. Are there any rules against quartering a deer if you're up there and, you know, packing it out? I know some states actually have rules against that, especially on public land. But to your knowledge, is there any rule against that if you wanted to do that?
I don't think it's illegal. I think because when I called and asked him, he goes, well, are you going to pack it out or what are you going to do? And I said, oh, we're just going to throw it on a cart and roll it out. And he laughed at us, but our cart actually worked. He was very skeptical of our cart, but our cart ended up dragging 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 deer out of that management area. So by the time that we ended up, you know, the family was done inflicting damage upon that management area, he was a believer in that cart that dad had built. But I believe you can pack them out.
Gotcha.
I've never done that. Mm-hmm. I've, you know, as you're probably well aware, we just go get them in a pickup truck and drag them to a tree and hang them up in a tree and do the work, you know, at back home kind of a thing.
Right, exactly.
So I will tell you this, that the mule deer, no matter what, you know, sagebrush and sumac and stuff they've been eating, tastes good. Tastes just good. Like a regular deer to me. Uh-huh. So it was, it tasted good anyway. You know, we always try to make it a point of, heart and tenderloin, you know, as a dinner for a successful hunt kind of a thing.
Right.
So,
okay.
Anything else that I may have left out?
No, I got one more quick question kind of with that early season stuff. Would you say that the mule deer, especially like early on, would you say they're maybe a little more daylight active than the whitetails, or kind of the same? I know you said you saw that one whitetail buck, but it sounded like he might have been spooked and rushed. But would you say the mule deer are maybe a little more daylight active than the whitetails?
I think, and I'll back up and tell a story from the first that I forgot. I think the mule deer get up and feed and then lay back down a lot more than a whitetail does. Mm. I bumped multiple whitetail bucks that just busted out of a little shrub like a covey of quail. Mm. Whereas most of the time, whenever I would see a mule deer, you know, I never saw a mule deer come up out of the ground. They were either already standing, which either means they knew we were coming, you know, they already heard us, you know, before we crested the hill and they were already standing up looking at us. Mm-hmm. Or they're just up and down more often than a whitetail.
Gotcha.
So on the first, I had set my cell camera up on one of the water tanks that I had found just in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And I was hoping that, you know, I'd see lots of deer come through this tank because I knew nobody had probably been down there quail or dove hunting. Nobody had wanted to walk that far, you know, that I would assume, because, you know, nobody knew it was there. It wasn't on the map. I found it while I was just walking around during dove season. And, so I put a camera up there, didn't have anything on it. You know, nothing went or anything like that. And so I went the first afternoon, on October 1st, I did not take my crossbow with me because I was just going to run up to this, you know, it's about a mile and a half or so from the parking spot up, grab a camera, bring it back to the truck, take it to another spot, set it up, et cetera. As I'm sure you know where this story is going, I got the camera and I'm walking back to the truck and I crest a hill and there's a deer standing, you know, there's a mule deer standing there looking at me. He's about 100 yards or so away. And I'm like, oh, cool, there's a mule deer. And then I take like two more steps and there's a bigger one just 20 yards right in front of me on my side of the bowl.
Uh-huh.
And it's one of those deals. I had enough time. I pulled my phone out of my pocket, put it on video, put the video, you know, camera on and watch this mule deer just look at me. And he like takes a step and he, you know, they do that little head up and down, left and right, trying to figure out what I am. And then finally he runs off. But I've got, you know, a 30-second video of this nice, you know, thin 4x4 mule deer just looking at me. And then he runs off. There's no way he wouldn't have been dead had I had the crossbow, you know, or, you know, any type of weapon at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course I get back to the truck and I'm telling Dad and he goes, you know, it's hunting season now. You can carry your gun. Cause we'd been doing this during dove season, we obviously couldn't shoot him then.
Uh-huh.
So he was giving me a hard time, about that. So I would say, for the most part, yeah, that was it. I think that was, I went back and looked at that video. I think that was 2:30 in the afternoon. Is whenever those three deer, and they were up, like just walking around feeding. They may have bedded down right in there somewhere. I don't know. I haven't learned quite that much about them yet.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I did end up shooting, his buddy was standing up at some point because that's what I saw him. If they never would have stood up, you know, I wouldn't have seen him. I'm trying to think of during all the times we sat up there looking around. I don't think I saw a whitetail up walking around in the middle of the day, except for once. And that's, I'll tell that story here in just a second. All the other whitetail movement I saw was basically first light, last light,
right,
kind of deal.
Right.
Now I wasn't in the whitetail habitat either.
Mm-hmm.
The river bottom is where everybody goes for the big whitetails.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't looking there. I don't know. That's the next plan is to go down there and try to find one in the river bottoms and see, because we've heard rumors of really nice whitetails down there as well. Again, this is a, you know, 20 miles wide or 20 miles long by 5 miles tall type thing. There's a lot of ground. There's a lot of cover, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And and everybody goes out there for mule deer. You know, so I think sometimes the whitetails get overlooked. It's not too much different than, you know, some of the other podcasts talk about Western states. You know, everybody goes west to Colorado or to Idaho for mule deer, and there's whitetails out there too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just everybody's like, I can shoot a whitetail back home in Pennsylvania or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they get a chance to get big out there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's what I think. I don't know for sure. You know, the cameras didn't tell me much at all. Again, there's not a whole lot of places to kind of funnel deer down up there. It's big, open, flat, hilly, you know, sand hills. Everything looks exactly the same. I would say make sure you get, you know, download the map on Onyx. There was some places that didn't have self-service. Most places did. You could get to the top of the hill and you could see town. So at least you would know which direction was which.
Mm-hmm.
But all of those sand dunes, you know, kind of all look the same. They all got the same amount of brush and stuff growing on them. They all look the same up there. So,
okay. Well, we're about 30 minutes in, so, and it sounds like you got a lot of stories left, and so just want to give you a heads up.
Yeah, I'll,
pick your poison.
I'll speed it up. Yeah, I'll speed it up. So, October 16th, 17th, and 18th is the youth gun season here in Oklahoma. My middle son Andrew got drawn for that other management area hunt up there, and so we went up Friday, and Friday morning both boys could hunt on one side of the unit, but they couldn't hunt on the other unit because that was the draw side. And so that morning my oldest son shot a four corn muley on the you know, regular management side.
Mm-hmm.
And Andrew and I actually saw one of the big muleys just on the other side of the fence where we couldn't go Friday morning.
Mm.
And so we had to wait till noon on Friday before we could hop the fence you know, and go hunt that other section for the controlled hunt. Uh-huh. So we were waiting and waiting and waiting, ended up going over to the manager's house, you know, at about 11:30, and was like, hey, you know, it's going to take us like 20 minutes to get over there, to get back over to that section, this, that, and the other. He goes, you've checked in, get out of here, go. You know, I didn't know. Sometimes they want everybody there at noon to give them a kind of debriefing. And he was just like, nope, I'm going to check your name off the box. Get out there. He said, just don't come, you know, dragging a deer back towards camp or towards the road at 12:01, you know, make it look like you were actually out there. Uh-huh. So we got out there. I think we walked over the fence at like 11:45 and tried to sneak around and try to find where those deer had gone. And they were gone. We don't know where they went. Don't know where they stopped. That's the other thing. You think they go over one hill and you're like, oh, they'll just be right there on the other side of the hill. And you get over to that top and you realize, you know, you can't see them. And there's seven other hills they could be hiding behind. We don't know where they went. So, Andrew and I, we're going to go sit in this other spot that I had seen deer before. And, so we go sit, and again, I try to find a place where, you know, you're not skylined, the sun setting behind you and you can see for, you know, at least 500-600 yards, most, you know, in that kind of 180 degree, range. So, we're sitting up there. It's probably 1 o'clock at this point. We didn't find those other bucks. And, we sit in this spot, and sure enough, not too long, you know, we see a mule deer doe about 500-600 yards from us. She stands up, kind of walks across this opening and disappears. And then another one, and then another one. So middle of the day, you know, there's those mule deer does are up moving around. And we're sitting there watching that. And all of a sudden, you know, a deer appears about 150 yards in front of us, just stands up out of the sumacs up there. And it's a spike muley. And I definitely had to talk my son out of shooting that spike muley when he stood up out there. And, I was just like, hey, you know, your older brother shot one bigger than that. You know, I was trying everything that I could to keep him from, you know, filling his tag Friday at 1:30, an hour and a half into his controlled hunt, uh-huh. You know? So we're sitting here watching this little muley. We're taking naps. You know, one of us will lay down, the other, you know, kind of do that whole deal. It's the middle of the day. And that mule deer buck actually walks towards us. He gets about 40 or 50 yards from us, as he's, you know, kind of feeding this way. But I happen to look over a hill and I see just randomly, this is one of those deals. Like I was taking a nap. I sat up, put the binoculars up, and I'm just kind of scanning around and, oh my gosh, there's a huge whitetail standing there. And so I kind of wake Andrew up I'm like right over that hill. Of course he can't see it. You know, he doesn't have binoculars like I do. And so I'm like, we're going to watch this. And, he goes, the mule deer is right here in front of us. It's like 40 yards in front of us at this point. And I was like, well, the big buck's over there. I'll watch him lay back down, see where he lays down. And then we'll sneak around this mule deer so we don't scare him. And then we'll try to put a sneak on that big whitetail. And he's all right. So we good. So we pack all of our stuff up. That deer, that whitetail stood up, didn't move, and laid right back down. And he probably wasn't standing. Well, of course, I don't know how long he was standing before I saw him, but he was probably standing 30 seconds after I saw him to when he laid back down and I couldn't see him again. Mm. That was just the luckiest thing that I just happened to look and he was there. And of course he could have been standing there for 5 minutes. I don't know.
Yeah.
So we sneak around this corner, don't spook the mule deer buck. I don't know where he went. And then, I set him down and I'm like, hey, you know, we got a dilemma here. We can sit right here at the base of this little shrub that the buck is laying down right underneath that other shrub. You know, we can't see him, but he's over there. We're about 120 yards away. When he stands up, you know, I feel confident you can shoot that far. You know, we can just sit here and wait. And I said, or see that other hill right there. We can belly crawl up on that other side of that hill. And we can basically kneel on top of that hill and we'll be about 50 yards away from him and we'll wait for him to stand up there. We'll try to run at him. I'll try to get him to stand up, that kind of stuff. And to my son's credit, he chose option A, mm-hmm. Let's sit at 120 yards and just wait on the deer. Uh-huh. The impatient father that I am overruled him and said, well, I said, I would like that idea if we were the only ones here, mm-hmm. but there's a dozen other kids. There's, you know, there's like 15 kids on this controlled hunt. I don't know where they are. You know, we've seen another group, you know, over that way, a ways, et cetera, et cetera. I said, we could sit here. I said that some other person could just walk over the hill and scare him and he'll run off and we'll never get a chance. Mm-hmm. So I talked him. I didn't talk him into it. I just told him what we were doing. So we belly crawled up there. I could see his antlers in the brush. That's all I could see was this antler tips. And I'm grunting at him. You know, I got one of those can calls. I'm flipping the can call over and over. You know, we got my son's on his knees with a tripod pointed right towards where the deer is. He never saw the antlers in the brush. But, you know, we probably sat there for, it felt like 5 minutes, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, who knows. And that deer finally just stood up and trotted over the hill. Never gave us a shot. Just a monster. And so we ran up the hill real fast. You know, again, we were 50 yards from him, and it's really hard to move in that brush. And we crested the hill and looked and looked and looked, and he was gone. I have no idea where he went. Those things, they know all the little dips and valleys in that, you know, and they can just sneak from one to the other and never give you a chance. Because, again, you know, if he's a mule deer, he had ran to the top of the next hill and turned around and looked at us 75 yards away, and we might have got a shot off, but that whitetail was just gone. I don't know for sure, but I think I got him on camera later on in the season, that same buck. And according to the manager, he did not get shot, as far as we know. They don't know everyone that gets shot off the management area, of course, but one that big, they probably would have seen. So there's a big one running around for anybody that wants to go up there and try to sneak up on him. So that was Friday. He got dehydrated, I think, you know, Friday evening, started getting headaches, and we went back to the house, pretty certain. Saturday, I don't remember what happened on Saturday. We must not have saw anything that was, you know, worth seeing. Sunday was cold and drizzly. We sat on one of the tanks, that my dad had sat on during archery season, and hoping that maybe, you know, one of the does had started to go get, you know, frisky or something like that, but we didn't see anything. We hiked around, we saw a group of about 15 mule deer does, and we checked the heads of every single one of them to make sure there wasn't a buck with them. You know, we've always heard they herd up sometimes like that, and there'll be one buck in his harem, but never did see any on that. And so then this is Sunday evening, you know, last day of the hunt. So we start walking back towards the truck, and we'd walk down a valley, get up to the crest of the hill, glass a little bit, walk down, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it took us about 3 hours or so to walk back towards the truck as we were, you know, just being sneaky. And literally the last hill that we would have crested before getting to the truck, before we could see the truck, we stepped on a big whitetail, like 15 yards in front of us. He comes thrashing up out of the brush. And this particular stuff was about 8 foot tall, and you couldn't walk through it, and that buck couldn't run through it either. I have no idea to this day why that buck didn't take his exit trail out. There was a nice worn trail headed south, you know, right out of where he busted from, and we would have never seen him if he would have ran that way. But instead, he ran directly away from us. I mean, I'm sure he was dead asleep, and we crested that hill, you know, chomping, and we're tired and, you know, grumpy because we haven't seen anything, and he come busting out of that. And so he's trying to jump through this stuff, and he just can't. And so he stops, and he's on the hill, you know, he's facing directly away from us, but he's almost like at a 45 degree angle up. So I tell my son, like, you know, put the crosshairs right between his shoulder blades because he's angled up that much. And he goes, all right. So he shoots, and dust kicks up about 2 feet to the right. And I'm like, oh, you missed. And so he racks another shell in, and that buck turns around and runs towards us, and then turns to go south and stops again at about 50 yards. And Andrew just drills him.
Nice.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I heard it, and, you know, he runs and just piles up. We just watch him pile up, and he, you know, we go to screaming and yelling and hooping and hollering, and he's crying, and I can't figure out why he's crying. And I look at him, and he's just got blood running down his face because he'd gotten too close to that scope and got scope bit on it. And and he's my face hurts, but I'm so happy. And oh, it's great. We called his mom, and he's crying. We FaceTimed his mom, and he's crying and excited, and she's excited, and it was great. So then I had known kind of where he fell. But we, you know, went down there again. It's really hard to walk through this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I made him find it. Like I was walking off in some other distant direction, you know, and, mm-hmm. and he starts yelling and whooping and come here. And so we came over there and found him, and you've got that picture, mm-hmm. As well. So, if he'd have run the other way, we'd have never seen him, but, mm-hmm. We excited on that. So got him. Mounted, and so then let's see, that was the end, that was the 18th of October. So then fast forward to November 21st, now the whole family, mom, dad, me, and my brother got drawn for the gun hunt on the management unit. Mm-hmm. and so we're up there the 21st, opening weekend of gun season, and there's a spot up there that dad likes to sit on one side of the hill and I like to sit on the other side of the hill, and so far dad's side is winning. Because they've shot three deer off that side of the hill and no deer on my side of the hill. That's where he and Elijah were that opening weekend of youth season when he shot that four corn muley, and he and mom were sitting on one side and my brother and I were sitting on the other, and he and mom shot a nice whitetail. She doesn't hunt much, so mm-hmm. it was one of those things, like first deer that walked by was getting the hammer dropped, and it was a nice 2.5-year-old 8-point, and my brother and I didn't see anything, but, you know, miles and miles away on one side, on the other side, we were looking. But, you know, as we're walking out, like I said, mom's already shot one. They've actually already gone and field dressed it, you know, and we're about 100 yards or so away from there. And my brother and I are walking out, and we happen to see a big muley running, dogging a doe, and we didn't know if he was dogging the doe or had been bumped by somebody else, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So he and I kind of hurry down the hill and up to the next hill, and he keeps going to the next hill to try to cut this deer off, and that buck stands up on top of the hill, and I can see my brother, you know, on one knee looking right at the deer, doesn't shoot this muley. Mm-hmm. and he turns around and runs towards me, and he runs down into a valley, gives me a, you know, he's just trotting, and I ended up shooting him and rolling him up as he was running by. And later on, I was like, why didn't you shoot him? And he was like, he was skylined and those other hunters were over there. And sure enough, as we were, you know, as you're looking from where his angle was, where the deer was, there was a couple of guys on the hill, you know, half mile away or so, which we think were the ones who actually bumped that deer originally. Mm. They were running away from him. And he was just like, I couldn't do it. You know, I saw, you know, like, that just wasn't a safe shot. And I was just like, now I feel bad because you should have gotten the first shot. I've already shot a mule deer with my archery, with my bow. Uh-huh. And now this nice muley runs by. And I, you know, anyway, so I actually have a picture of this muley from September 5th when my buddy and I were out glassing, on my camera. It's kind of cool to see him, you know, in velvet, and then again now that, you know, that I shot him. So and then Saturday morning, so I went with my son to our family land that's nearby, because I was done with the control hunt. Mm-hmm. and he shot a nice buck in out of the barn that we call it over there on our family land, and just, you know, during that rut time, man, it pays to be there all day. Mm-hmm. we literally got in to the barn where we sit and kind of look over this little creek system at about 1 o'clock, and 1:45 was when that buck cruised through, and one of the guys that has permission up there has a little deer feeder up there, and so that buck just cruised through, ate about 3 mouths full of corn, and just kept right on walking. Hmm. You know, there's no doubt in my mind he was just cruising, looking to see if there's any does at the feeder. Mm-hmm. You know, at 1:45 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my oldest son shot a really nice buck there on that camera, or at that place. Sunday morning, my dad went back to that same hill and eventually shot a broken off whitetail, broke off his main beam on one side. Mm-hmm. And dad had said too, he's like, man, I've been on like 6 or 7 controlled hunts and I've never even seen a deer to shoot. So he was going to shoot the first deer that walked by as well. On a controlled hunt. Uh-huh. And then Sunday evening, my brother, got into some deer, but he didn't know exactly where the boundary lines were. He wasn't up there with me when we were scouting as much. And so he didn't know where the, which management area was which. And there's fences that run all through those properties, you know, old fences from the cattle ranch and even current fences for when they do put cows in there and stuff. And so he wasn't sure. He was waiting for this deer to jump this fence to get on what he thought was the management unit. When in fact it was on the whole time. He could have walked right down to the fence, you know, and so he was kicking himself for not knowing that. And that's another thing to keep in mind is when you do those kind of things, make sure you know where you are and where all the lines are, you know, A, to keep yourself legal and make sure you're not on the wrong side, but then B, so that you know, hey, that deer right over there, I can go hunt that deer. I can shoot that deer. That's the fast forwarded version of that. So you'll have pictures of those muleys. And unfortunately the gun hunt for the muley wasn't exciting as it could have been because, you know, we were walking out, he got bumped, he ran by, I shot it, you know.
That's how it happens sometimes though. You know, like the bigger deer that I shot this year was definitely the least exciting story. And then, you know, at the end of the year, I shot this kind of management, broke off 8-point. And, you know, not near as good of a buck, but heck, you know, more exciting story. And so that's just the way it is sometimes.
Yep. So, and now we're torn. Now I am, at least, because I've been bitten by the Western I can see as far as I want to bug. And so we've got two deer on our family land in north central Oklahoma that'll make anybody drool. And so it's going to be hard to go sit in a tree stand where you can only see like 50 yards at a time and just hope a deer walks by as opposed to being out there in the panhandle and being able to see it and make something happen, you know, either make it happen or make it not happen, you know, that kind of stuff. That's how it works sometimes. So, yeah. And then, you know, the last story, like I said, we had a great year. Both boys got their first turkeys this year as well. One of them up there in the panhandle, on the management area, one of them, we've been chasing, there was two toms and six hens, that we knew where were, and we set up Saturday morning on them. And then we set up Sunday morning on them and they just didn't have anything to do. Those two toms weren't leaving those, you know, six hens. We can get them to come off. And my buddy actually herded them towards us. If he'd have had a shotgun, he would have been able to, you know, shoot one of them. Like we were watching him and we were like, oh, they're out there in that field and we're set up right here. They should walk right by us. And, no, they didn't. They just kind of looked at him and he ended up pushing them and they just kind of walked in front of him, but he wasn't able to herd them our direction. So it was just one of those deals. Like if we would have been the ones that were on the other side, we could have shot one of those, but we ended up seeing him again, glassing that area up there. Is just, you know, glass those fields. There's a black dot out there in the middle of the field. There might be a turkey out there. And so that's what we saw. Drove around the section about 4 or 5 miles to get to the other side of the management area. And sure enough, he was still down there. So we parked the truck and Elijah and I went to put the sneak on and it was about 800 yards between where the birds were and where the truck was. And we walked around, you know, followed a little dry creek bed and snuck up on them. And we could, every now and then I could see them down there, but they weren't responding. The wind's blowing 100 miles an hour. It's the panhandle. It always does. And so we're not sure if they couldn't hear us or, you know, we assumed it was two Jakes, you know, based on what we could see with the binoculars and that kind of stuff. And so we started crawling across this, you know, creek bottom towards them just to get a little bit closer to maybe they would hear us. And I've got a decoy and he's got the gun and we're crawling and my buddy's up at the truck with his spotting scope and he ends up calling me and he's like, man, they're coming. I'm like, where? He's like, this tree and this tree and this tree. And I'm like, yeah, that doesn't help at all. He's like, they're literally about to step on you, you know, about 800 yards away when they're 75 yards from me. The difference between 800 yards and 875 yards through his spotting scope made them look like they were, you know, 10 feet from us. And, but yeah, we ended up seeing them. I had the, like I said, I had that turkey in front of me. And, once they saw that turkey decoy as we were crawling behind it, they just started running right towards us across that field. And so Elijah was able to, you know, raise up on his elbows and just shoot the lead Jake, and then he got to see the good old "you were my buddy until you were injured" deal.
Yeah,
the turkeys like to do. You know, and that other Jake just started hammering on him. Mm-hmm. You know, like, well, and then we ended up walking over there to him, and they're completely oblivious sometimes. It's one of those deals, like, if my other son would have been with me, we could have got both of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they just sit there and beat each other up after they've been dead. So, yeah, and that was youth weekend. And then the next weekend, my dad took the other son, Andrew, up to our family land, and he ended up getting a Jake up there as well. So
nice.
we had a great season, and you know, that's now looking forward. I don't know when we're going to have a season like that again.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's the 2020 and 2021 year, and good stuff. You got all those pictures you can post for people to see.
Yeah, too, I will. So. I will. Yeah, that's an awesome story, man. And that's, yeah, like you said, that is a heck of a year. And yeah, I just, you know, I talked a few weeks ago about the kind of the controlled hunt system a little bit. And, you know, I've been putting in for a couple of years now, but I've yet to draw anything. Granted, I'm probably putting in for some of the harder tags, you know, like I want that adventure, kind of like you were talking about. So yeah, but it's just nice to talk to somebody who has drawn, and not only drawn, but got out there and really put the work in and been successful. So yeah, it's really cool to hear all the stories.
Yeah, you can definitely tell the difference. Like, we spent, you know, multiple weekends, mm-hmm. three weekends at least, plus a couple of days on either side up there in the panhandle in prep for our two controlled hunts we had in that area. Whereas the other one up there in northeastern Oklahoma, we never went. You know, I did call a few guys that I knew that lived around that area and ask if they'd ever been in that section, you know, and they had a few things, you know, yeah, you know, this, and this, you know, that kind of stuff. It pays to, if you're going to do it, go do it.
Right.
You know, that's definitely where it comes down to. Spend the time to actually go out there and do that kind of stuff. I have been putting in for the draw since, you know, I was in youth, and I have done two other. I've been drawn for a Little River gun hunt about 10 years ago or so, and then a Cross Timbers muzzleloader hunt about 5 years ago or so. Both of those times where it was a close but no cigar thing. And now if I ever go back, I know more
right.
about it,
yeah.
you know, than I did going in originally.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely a lot of that. And the managers up there are great. You know, I have found that, you know, calling and talking to them, you know, they're pretty busy usually. And so you don't get a whole lot out of them, you know, on the phone. But if you happen to stop by and they're at, you know, at the barn or, you know, that kind of stuff, and, you know, you can chat with them and point out this, that, and the other, you know, this is where I was thinking, this is what I was thinking, because they're up there, they hunt those areas too, you know, they love doing that kind of stuff. So.
Well, cool. I guess I just have one last question for you, and you were very informative as we went through this, and I appreciate that. But, you know, if somebody does decide to go up, you know, northwest and hunt this big public land stuff, do you have any little tips or tricks that you would recommend?
Shoe leather, you know, as everybody mm-hmm. says, just to put in the time to walk. I've got a $150 pair of Nikon binoculars, and they were more than sufficient for what I did. I did buy the lowest end Vortex spotting scope last summer, and I never even took it on the actual hunts. That was just when we were scouting and that kind of stuff. I did get a bunch of cool videos through my phone, you know, through the spotting scope of those deer that we were seeing. But yeah, it's just get out there and look. You know, again, if you're going whitetail, a lot of times everything I've heard has been they're down in the river bottoms. The whitetails I saw weren't, but I wasn't looking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was up in the pastures and the scrub and that kind of stuff. But it's not too, at least this particular one and a couple of the other ones up there, it's not too far off the management areas before you get into ag field stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still quite a bit of, you know, brush to ag type food to bed to food type patterns in most of those places up there. Now there are some that are, you know, that don't have any ag around. There's some areas that don't have any ag, and again, every deer I saw was just nipping everything that he walked by.
Yeah.
You know, sagebrush here, sumac brush there, tumbleweed here. You know, they were eating everything that they just walked by. It and didn't seem like they were, you know, where I'm originally hunt, where it was, you know, they walk past all the acorns to eat the Milo in the corn, you know, in the mm-hmm. cornfield, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Or they walk past your pile of corn sometimes to go eat the corn out in the wheat field, you know, out in the cornfield.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I would highly suggest using those controlled hunts as just an excuse to get out and go do something in one of those places that you didn't think you'd, you know, it's one thing to be like, hey, I'm going to go out to, you know, Sandy Sanders, or I'm going to go out to Black Mesa or, you know, Black Kettle and those kind of places mm-hmm. on this weekend. And, it's another when you're like, oh, I've drawn this. Mm-hmm. I want to actually be successful. I want to do something. I want to be successful at it. So I'm going to put in a little bit of extra work, at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think the controlled hunts are awesome.
Yeah.
You know, they give you a chance. I've got my list of what I'm going to put in and I need to do that so I don't forget, you know, and miss a year.
Uh-huh.
You know, the elk stuff is different last year and this year. They've actually got a walk-in stuff. Whereas you and a buddy, and you actually got to hike in and hike out and pack out an elk and all that kind of stuff. They're trying to get a little bit of the more Western feel to the, to that particular hunt down there in the Wichita Mountains.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, all the odds are there. The Wildlife Department does a great job of laying out, you know, who was successful, where they were successful,
mm-hmm.
You know, all those kind of things. I'm sure there's lots of people that are screaming at me that, you know, I'm blowing up hotspotting,
right.
You know, a place. But all that information is already out there mostly. Mm-hmm. And again, if you go look at the numbers, there was 11 people on that controlled hunt. We were four of the 11 and there was seven successful people and three of them were my family.
Right.
You know, so there were other people that were successful, uh-huh. And they may or may not have put in the same amount of work. I don't know, but I know we weren't successful at the place that we didn't put in as much work.
Right.
So that's kind of it.
Awesome. Well, TJ, it's been great having you on. You're a great storyteller and very helpful. So, yeah, we really appreciate you coming on today.
Absolutely. You know, and if you don't mind, if you ever do any kind of nuisance stuff, that's what I do.
All right.
I own a nuisance wildlife removal company. So squirrels, raccoons, skunks, that kind of stuff out of attics. That's what I was saying. Like I can choose like, no, I'm not working tomorrow. I'm going to go hunt tomorrow kind of a thing. So, if you ever need anything like that, or, you know, anybody has any of those type of questions, you know, I do that. I do a little bit of habitat manager work, as well.
Okay.
So that's kind of what we do. So,
and what's the name of your company, just in case people want to find you?
So it's Oklahoma Wildlife Solutions, and that's, you know, .com, mm-hmm. Facebook, all that kind of stuff. It's basically the same name, Instagram, Twitter, all those type of things. You'll see a lot of honeybee work right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm removing honeybees out of people's houses nearly every day. So you'll see videos and pictures and that kind of stuff for that type of stuff.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Awesome. Well, once again, I appreciate it, TJ, and thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you.
There we go. Man, I'm so glad TJ reached out to me. It was awesome having him on. He had a ton of information, a ton of stories, and yeah, it was just a good old time. And it kind of went along perfectly with my adventure hunt rambling I did at the end of my last podcast. And so it's kind of nice to keep that theme going, you know. So anyway, yeah, thanks again, TJ. I hope you guys enjoyed this one. I sure did. It was really nice to just kind of sit back and listen. And it was almost like I was listening to my own podcast. Like I just got to sit there and listen the whole time. And so that was super nice. I'm going to keep you guys updated on my turkey hunt that I am hopefully going to do this coming weekend. I hope I have a little bit more success. Good luck to all you hunters out there. And turkey season is in full swing. When this comes out, I guess the whole state will be open, Southeast region and all the guys up north and west that have already been getting to hunt. And if you guys are successful, let me know. You know, I'll throw it out there on the page or send me a message. And I love getting to just share all these adventures together with you guys. So good luck to everybody who's going to be hunting this weekend. Thanks again for listening, and I will see you guys next week.